You know, but I am a vampire after all of these canines. But, I mean, the kids had it more together than the bias.
Right.
Even, like, I was the first white person I ever fucking saw. Or the first American or whatever.
Yeah.
And then
you're
white.
Right.
I didn't know that.
Huh?
Yeah.
See, there you go.
But I learned something new about you.
You're fine.
Okay, go ahead.
But it was a lifesaver. They saved my life, literally. They showed me how to urinate and defecate in the jungle where it was saturated with Charlie and get away with it.
Well, Randolph...
They didn't care about too many other people then.
Randolph was very kind to the Vietnamese children. We also had to keep them distracted from becoming carriers of bombs and stuff. But he also brought them lots of gifts and food and was very kind to them. He wouldn't go back and make up for the terrible things.
The eighth and ninth step, if you will, or the 12 steps.
Yeah.
You're familiar with the 12 steps?
Yeah.
You really are. I mean, real familiar?
I get tired of it. I hear somebody. I mean,
okay. The only reason why I'm saying it is I don't want to. Because
alcoholism is a big thing in the gay community, and if you don't click in with the 12 step mentality,
oh,
you can't be part
that.
Of it.
Fuck that.
But I'm familiar with this.
No, that is not my point. But the restitution aspect of it. To make a searching, a sincere search for your moral inventory.
Mm-hmm.
For me, like I was telling my buddy last night, it's a bit much. I really don't think I need to go through any process in my life.
Yeah, we're fine.
Check.
Yeah, you can give it a check.
Okay.
Thank you. I really don't think I need to stir up any ashes and stuff. It's too
much. No, you don't.
Because the eighth and ninth step, says to make restitution and all that kind of stuff, unless it was more injured than the original damage, and that would be true in my life.
Yeah, there's you know, you don't
go
have
back to villages and shit, like you could call all the way there.
You know, if you were in a better position financially, where you could travel stuff, then you might consider that stuff.
But I would never have enough money to pay for a human life. Get a clue.
All right. You could do something if you had more money. Just like, I'm frustrated that I don't want somebody. Like, here, I hold on to my money. I'm on disability, right? I want to befriend some homeless people and treat them like I'm treating you. But I can't afford it.
I have to tell you one thing. You over-attach the gravity of the stigma of that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't broadcast that. I don't.
Thank you, guys.
Thank
you.
That's me and you.
I didn't know you guys.
Really. It's important, you know, it's a very private part of my life.
Yeah.
Because it's a PUG. I told you about my acronyms, right?
Yes, you have PUG and PUS.
What was PUS?
Public Urban Shaman.
Professional
Urban Shaman.
No, Professional Urban Gorilla.
Yeah,
Professional Urban Camper and Professional Urban Shaman. Yeah.
So if I had more money, I would be able to use that to treat more homeless people to meals and dinner, stuff like that.
Do you buy lottery tickets or anything of that nature ever? Neither do I. I have.
Only time I buy a lottery ticket is if I'm in a dream, an angel comes to me and says, this is it, go to this such a place, such a time, you will get millions of dollars.
So you attach a greater significance on this than I thought. You use this as a guiding stick.
Yes, but I respect all beliefs, including atheists or whatever. Right?
Yeah, right.
Equally valid.
One of my ex-best friends, that's a deep story, was both director of the Atheist Club of America in Arizona, and the Communist Party.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine? I was just telling someone who's fanatic. So I've had a pretty good exposure between my mother being atheist, my dad being a devout Catholic. I've had that A to Z effect of religion versus non-religion.
Well, I was a student of anthropology at the University of Missouri, so I was exposed to all the different worldviews and religions and stuff. So I sort of absorbed
that. And I studied theosophy at the Lake Forest College.
Yeah, we have that parallel. It's interesting because I've already figured it out by the things you talk about stuff. You've been exposed to Buddhist, Hindu thoughts, Catholic, Jewish, atheist, and so forth.
Baha'i, lived on the Navajo Reservation.
Very good.
Baha'is, kind of an interesting.
Wow, that's a mix.
Yeah.
It was pretty. That's very, very
conducive.
It's very good to have to be exposed and absorb all those different worldviews and stuff.
How there's a stereotypical, the older you get, the more narrow-minded or closed-minded. Who came up with that? And the other one is, later on in life, your parents, you'll see that your parents were right.
Uh-uh. Sad to say, I would be glad when they're dead and gone.
I wouldn't say that. How about closure? How about reconciliation reconnoitering on their transgression?
No, once they're gone, there won't be the expectations put upon me to act as if they had done so many wonderful things to me. They raised me as a stranger.
You don't think they'll ever change, huh?
God, they're in the 80s now. There's not.
You don't think that a day of reckoning in their conscience, whatever time that threshold may appear, in any sort of foreboding or premonition, that they might want to come to terms with that?
Well, they haven't, and it's unlikely they will in this life.
Do they know how to communicate with you?
Yeah, on a very superficial level, yeah. I'm over all that. I'm not interested. They're like strangers. It's suddenly coming into my life. I really just look at it.
Same with mine. When's the last time you saw your parents?
12 years ago.
I haven't seen my mother since 1974 and my father in 1978.
That's healthy.
Yeah, I guess. You know, I got a good line. I told this to Beeves one day in the Bank of America. I was trying to tell her that this crack attitude she was having with me and stuff. I'm just being very blunt. I told her in the Bank of America on Powell Street, there on Market and Powell, you know. I said, the only thing you can give me is distance. She just met. Did you hear that? The only thing you can give me is distance.
Well, see, the problem with a lot of families in America, and dysfunction in general, too much dysfunctionality, but they think that part of raising kids isn't learning how to be friends with them.
Isn't that horrible?
Mm-hmm.
That's the part we miss.
When that means you cut the apron strings once
right. You're
in the late teens.
Of course.
Now,
and then you find out you could go voluntary back because you like the company and
don't
shit.
Call me mom and dad anymore. Call us Ann and Vincent.
Yeah,
and
right. Something like that. Exactly. Pat Shirley. Yeah. I totally concur with that.
Take it before the wind goes away.
Out of the way.
I only worry about the bill floating away.
Yeah. But I do have. I'm different than you in this. I'd like to have some reconciliation with them. You and my mom told me last time I talked to her on the phone. I'm right there at Noriega and 47th.
Mm-hmm.
You know that area at all?
Yeah.
Dean's Deli and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
A little bit. I mean, once every 2 years I would go by there. Yeah.
Okay.
I used to live out there for about 4 months.
Okay, so you know the area.
Mm-hmm.
My mom said. How'd she put it? I don't choose these words. It was devastating. Even if this is a couple of years ago. She said, She said, the only thing you're going to get from me is your burial is paid for.
Wait a minute. She said that.
She paid for my burial plot.
You should say, oh, you are assuming I'll go before you?
How do you think
And you say, not.
I was already in the throes of owies and stuff. So.
A mother's love can be the most suffocating thing.
I don't think she even loves me.
I don't like the implication of incest, the incestuous relationship that a lot of American mothers have with their children. You see, if a mother still imagines there's a baby in their arm, she's also imagining you sucking on their tit. And it's really horrible when she still wants you to call you mom and you're 40, 50, 45 years old or whatever.
What are you old?
She's still acting like, don't talk to me like that or whatever. You're still a little baby and she's sucking your tit. So, man, lady, I don't know who the hell you think you are, but I'm not sucking on your tit. I like to say, thank God I wasn't breastfed.
You'd like to
just
tell you, my mom would never let me get away with calling her Shirley.
Well, you see, that's not being...
I know.
You don't own the person you bring into the world. We were never asked to be brought here.
You know, there's that... Yeah, I never made a reservation, did you?
No.
Chocolate or vanilla.
I would have... in Denmark's the most egalitarian culture on the face of the earth right now. And everybody's on a first name basis. You don't call your parents mom and dad. And when someone's waiting on you like that, you it's with the awareness that they're not your servant. They're there to work and earn a living, and you treat them as an equal. Just, you don't say snap your fingers or whatever like that. In Denmark, the children call their parents. You know, whatever
their first name is. The majority, I would say.
No.
Even from...
Very egalitarian.
You mean when they're still...
Oh, yeah.
Pre-pubescent and stuff.
Mommy and daddy are not the first words they learn.
I've learned.
No.
I mean not the, the, yeah, other things, but that's significant, mm-hmm, to know that. Because, mm-hmm, I remember there's this woman that I fell in love with, sort of. I got too young, and I said, but she called her parents by their first names.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that. Jewish girl.
Well, see, in our society, we maintain these